Hey, football fans, for those of you who can't get enough Baldy's breakdowns, be sure to subscribe to Brian Baldinger's The Best Football Show. New episodes drop Monday through Friday, where Baldy breaks down the best games of the week. Be sure to subscribe to The Best Football Show on the Odyssey app or wherever you find your podcasts.
Chris and Amy show on KMOX, Mark's Coors, and Ranji. We're here with you today until 1 o'clock. Then it's Dave Glover. We will hang out with the Dave Glover Show. We do it every weekday. We do that 1 o'clock hour with them. It's a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. We have a good time. We might get into some existential stuff. we might hear Andrew talk about something that doesn't make any sense.
That's what makes it so great.
It really is. Did you see this? I know I mentioned it during the break earlier. I'm not sure if you've had a chance to go and actually look at it, Amy. But we know the Doge Committee is the Elon Musk-driven entity that is working in the government to try and cut waste. At least that's what he says he's trying to do. And there are a lot of people who work in the federal government who are worried about it. I happen to think it's probably not the best idea to have this one person unilaterally decide who gets to stay and who doesn't. But at any rate, there is now a Missouri online portal.
Okay.
Which is like a Doge adjacent portal that you can go to, and you can submit reports of, quote, government duplication, waste, or inefficiencies. And the leader of the Senate Government Efficiency Committee is State Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman out of Arnold. And she said this week that Missourians deserve a government that works for them, not against them. This new portal gives citizens a direct line to spotlight inefficiencies to help in our efforts to ensure taxpayer dollars are used wisely and state services run effectively. So just taking a look at the website, it is, you know, it's just like if you were trying to contact a company, you know, you go to a website and there's the contact tab, you type on it or you click on it and then you put in your name, your email address, your actual address, and then you leave your comment. It's just like that. That's all it is. I don't know. I don't know how I feel about this. I do agree that people should be allowed to have a say in all of this, but I really feel like this can get overused and abused.
Well, okay. I'm not as concerned with this as I am with maybe the way the immigrant hotline, like spotting illegal immigrants, like that one to me, it can be much more malicious.
Yeah. Yes, yes, yes.
And I know that some form of that has always existed on the ICE and U.S. Customs website. I forgot which website, but Department of Homeland Security. I can't remember. But one of the websites, you can make a report, which I understand. Like if you are seeing an abuse of, you know, illegal immigration, whatever it may be, you can make a report. I think it's the way it's been advertised as like a bounty system is kind of gross. With this, I don't know what the abuse would be other than it would just waste the time of the people answering the emails. And actually, I would like to hear from you because I'm trying to think of, we all know there's government inefficiency, but like locally, like what would you spot? I mean, obviously, city government's not going great, but you wouldn't use that for the Doge, I don't think. We have St. Louis County Council, like, well, they paid all those fees, you know, for the argument between the county executive, Sam Page, and Governor Parson about who would appoint the county prosecutor. That seems inefficient, but we all know about it.
Like, I wouldn't know how would an average person honestly know what's waste and what isn't.
That's my question. And I can, and you guys, I just heard about this. So if I'm missing something that's obvious, I get it. I could, my brain doesn't always work as smoothly as I would like it to. But I would say this, my first thought when I think of inefficiency, I'm like, oh, DMV. But those are privately owned. The DMV is. Those are all privately run. So that would not count as something that you could report.
And are DMVs really that inefficient, or have we just spent the last 40 years complaining about them so the narrative is that they're inefficient?
Right, because
I don't feel like I spend that much time in one when I go.
I think there are, I've had some nightmare circumstances, but I think it's just probably lack of locations. Everybody jumping in at the end of the month or beginning of the month, and as well as a lot of people having a hard time knowing what paperwork they need for certain things. So I don't know I guess the way to make them more efficient would be to just have more of them. Because I will say, the DMV that I've gone to most recently, it's been very crowded, but it's been efficient. But there are usually only a couple of workers available at the windows. So that to me is less efficiency and more staffing slash location issues. But if you have something that you could call in that would be relevant, because my brain isn't quite sure exactly what this looks like,
what a complaint
would look like.
I would love to.
Why is my brain not working?
I'm right there with you. Yeah. I think there's something, and we'll reach out to Senator Mary Elizabeth Coleman, her office, and see if she's willing to come on and talk about it. And we'd like to hear the other side, too, if there are opponents to this, which I have not heard of opposition at the moment. Again, this is a thing that we're just now hearing about, but it's, I don't know. This seems like it would just end up getting bogged down with a bunch of complaints that don't really have anything to do with waste.
Is it inefficiency and wasteful spending, or just inefficiency? Because they are slightly different things.
Let me read to you exactly what it says. The Government Efficiency Portal, that's what it's called. And it is just one page on the senate.mo.gov website. So here's the description. The Missouri Senate Government Efficiency Committee is asking the public to report any instances of government duplication, waste, or inefficiencies.
Okay.
Your submissions will be reviewed and incorporated into our ongoing efforts to make government processes more efficient and improve services. Please note all information submitted is subject to Missouri's Sunshine Law, blah, 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 and may be publicly disclosed.
The only thing I can think of right now, because I know the government does waste money, it could be in the hundreds of thousands or millions, which I know is a drop in the bucket for our federal budget. But, you know, you don't want to be wasteful with $20 million. I know Rachel Zimmerman brought this up a couple of days ago, just some of the random ways we spend money. Like, for instance, the U.S. government did spend $20 million for a new Sesame Street show in Iraq, which I'm not saying it's bad. I'm just saying maybe we should use the $20 million here. What if we could, you know, use it for perhaps more direct pressing needs. So I know $20 million is nothing compared to our government, but that would be something that, yeah, people could say, you know, are these special interest groups pushing this money?
You mentioned that number. Doge wants to, they say that they want to trim $2 trillion. So it doesn't even make a dent.
USAID is 0.1%. And I get that. But what I'm saying is, you could, I don't think there's anything wrong with being mindful. What's the word I'm looking for? Really, really struggling here today. being cognizant and aware of how we're spending money. And I get it, compared to the overall government, it could make you question, like, you know, do we really need to spend that $20 million there? Maybe that's what this is for. If you know of some frivolous spending by the state?
Yeah, here's the, when it comes to the state, I don't know what to think about this. The overall effort around the country, the Doge Committee, my problem with it is, if they're really serious about cutting services and trimming the money and the bloat and whatever, which there, of course, there are a lot of places that can happen. You want to make a serious dent, you got to go after Department of Defense, you have to go after the military, because that is by far the largest chunk of what we spend in our budget every single year, by far.
Well,
so I don't know.
Discretionary, very non-discretionary spending, because you could, some people have said that we're a military with a country attached. I would say, as someone else put it, we're a nursing home with nukes, because what we spend on, you know, the healthcare services, Medicare, Medicaid, Social Security, all of that, which is fine and good. I'm just saying those are the big chunks. And how you look at discretionary, non-discretionary spending.
Yeah, my point is, if the effort is we need to cut spending, if you really want to make a serious dent, it has to be the stuff like that. It can't be these things on the fringes that end up helping average people. It can't be like Medicare cuts and Medicaid and stuff like that the average person really relies on. If you're serious about making, otherwise it's just you're cutting and it's eyewash.
I guess, and maybe we're saying the same thing, maybe it's semantics. I kind of disagree, because I would say I don't consider military or Medicare spending as fat you can trim. I consider both necessary.
I think there's probably a lot of bloat in defense that could be trimmed, and we would still have the strongest military in the world. I'm sure that if you really want to examine it, how many times has the Department of Defense, the military, gone through an audit and been able to explain every dollar that they spend?
Well, I mean, I get it, but I don't think no government department can do that. And I will say, I would rather have a little bit too big of a military than too small, especially when we are.
But we don't have one that's too small. We could cut and still be bigger than everybody else in the world.
I would be interested to talk to maybe General Mark Hertling about that, because what they have said is our supplies they're not overflowing right now, especially even like so much of the aid we're giving to Ukraine is in weaponry and military
older supplies,
which is important. But I would be interested to talk to maybe General Mark Hertling and say, where do we stand? How are we? Our Colonel Jeff McCausland about that, because I know we are not, and it depends on your foreign policy view, but we're not overflowing with military prowess when you look at some of our geopolitical adversaries. Jim Talent said China would beat us head to head right now.
Yeah, I don't think that's true, because I read a lot of the analysis about it, and that's not what anybody really says. You have a few people who here and there make the argument that we're being surpassed by China or whoever else, but it does not appear to be true.
But you're not down. I mean, that's one of his specialties.
Yeah, well, I've read a lot about this. I don't think that it is. I think people like to make that argument. But I don't think it's true.
I guess my point is, if you're not going to cut military or Medicaid, it's okay to be scrupulous when it comes to smaller spending. I'm just trying to wrap my head around what a report would look like to the Missouri Doge.
And my issue with the spending cuts is, well, I have a bunch of issues with it, is that I think people think, kind of like when it comes to a team's payroll, that if the team's payroll is lower for their baseball team or their football team or whatever, they think tickets are going to be cheaper. I think people think their taxes are going to go down if they cut this spending, and your taxes ain't going down. It's just not going to work that way. That's Amy Markscores. I'm Chris Ranji. Rasheen Aldridge, alderperson for the city of St. Louis. We'd love to know what's happening at those meetings that have not gone particularly well, is set to join us at 12:30. So after the 12:30 news, Rasheen Aldridge will be with us here in studio on KMOX.
Well, we've talked quite a bit about the issues at the City Justice Center, aka the city jail, and just how there have been fights. They've been understaffed. The inmates have talked about inhumane conditions. We've also seen the riots where they have sheets are on fire. They're throwing chairs out broken windows of the City Justice Center. It's been overall a mess and not a lot of transparency in what's going on there. Oh, my goodness. I even forgot about the locks. The locks that didn't lock for years, which seems to be...
They did fix that part, right?
They did recently, yes. This past fall, I believe, the final locks were locked to help with that situation. And of course, the person running the jail, Jennifer Clemens Abdullah, was on leave mysteriously for months. She is no longer there. Well, a 34-year-old former inmate of the City Justice Center detailed to KSDK the inhumane conditions. So this is Stacy Strozier, I think, maybe Strozier, but Strozier, said, quote, "You got to step over other people's bodies. The toilet wasn't working." It gets gross. "It was just feces, urine, throw up stuck in the toilet. Finally, they opened the door. We got to get in the doorway and said, 'You're all closing this door until we get a plunger. We have to do the most just for the bare minimum.'" He said as well that there was someone he was in a cell with who had a colostomy bag that was overflowing. They had to kick on the door to get someone to help them to get him a new bag. They did get a new bag, but then he and the other inmates were forced to clean it up, but they didn't have anything to clean it up with. So they were begging even for like dry toilet paper.
Yeah.
This is horrific.
It's really bad.
Hellish conditions. I mean, these are hellish conditions, Ronj.
Look, I know that people listening might say they're inmates, they've committed crimes. Who really cares about their living conditions? But we're supposed to be better than that. As a country, we're supposed
legally,
to be better
we
than
have
that.
To.
And legal, yes. Even if you've committed a crime, regardless of the crime, you deserve some humane treatment. That's what we have set as a standard in the United States. So that's the way it should exist here. It sounds to me, the biggest problem is that they are just horribly understaffed and have fewer than half of the officers they need. They, according to the story, need 198 officers at the facility. Only 74 of those positions are filled. That's really bad. Now, it could be a combination of things. The pay might be terrible. Maybe nobody wants to do the job, or they're just not doing an effective job of outreach to try and get people to work there, or they're slow in the hiring process. It could be any of those things. It could be all of those things at once. But the reality is you have to staff the place, and you probably don't get to this where you've got these terribly inhumane conditions that are unlivable for people. And I don't care if they're criminals or not. Mm-hmm. We have a standard in the country. You have to treat people right.
Yeah, no, it's insane. And again, just to highlight, because I do think the details really drive it home, just how disgusting, unsanitary, and inhumane it was. Again, I brought up the colostomy bag. I mean, all of the contents, the feces, were still all over him and on his clothes and on the floor. And the other inmates were begging for something to clean it up with. And this story is appalling and abhorrent. And this is, too, Ronj, makes me question where was the oversight? How was City Hall? How was the mayor okay with this? Why was there not more transparency? Now, they do have, a new commissioner of the City Justice Center, Doug Burris. He's looking into things, but it sounds like there was zero transparency for so long that they're still trying to figure out just how bad things were. And the mayor ran on the platform of closing the workhouse, close the city workhouse, which is the medium security prison downtown or in the city. Closed the workhouse. Ben and Jerry took out the ice cream people, took out a full page ad to close the workhouse. Now, Charlie Brennan and I toured the workhouse, and it seemed okay when we toured it that they had made some improvements. The inmates all knew the judge that we walked around with. Again, I'm not saying it's a Four Seasons. It's still a jail, but I can tell you what, nothing like we're hearing what was happening in the City Justice Center. So, if the mayor was so concerned about the workhouse, who are the people that are concerned about Justice Center?
I don't know what the line of communication is. If the mayor is hearing about them, I would think so. I can't imagine that if you have any association with that, not the workhouse, but with the City Justice Center, if you have any, you work there or you oversee it in some way or you've heard reports, how do you not get them to the mayor? I would think the office would know about it. So I don't know why it gets neglected. The argument you might get is, well, we have other issues we need to get to first, and that's the least of our problems.
But the commissioner of the City Justice Center, Clemens Abdullah, was appointed by Mayor Tashara Jones. That's her appointment.
Yeah.
Now, Doug Burris is her next appointment. But you would think if you made that appointment and things are falling apart, you would have some direct line of communication.
The Outlaw Festival is on June 28th at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater. It is Willie Nelson and Bob Dylan, and we've got tickets to give away right now. We're looking for caller number 7 to the contest line, 314-955-1120, 955-1120. Best of luck to you. Rasheen Aldridge, alderman in the city of St. Louis, Ward 14, joins us next. Chris and Amy show on KMOX, and we are joined in studio by Rasheen Aldridge, who is an alderman of Ward 14, which is a big part of downtown St. Louis, and he is with us. It's good to see you, Alderman. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to be back. Thanks for having me.
Well, we wanted to talk to you about a number of stuff. It's been a pretty interesting week with the Board of Aldermen. We've talked a lot about it. But want to start with your tour of the AT&T building, which you just came from.
Yes.
And there are plans to renovate it. It's like the biggest office building downtown. It'd be nice to see something done with it. What did you see and what was the tour all about?
Yeah, so it's actually nice to, I never was able to see the original AT&T building. Unfortunately, I've seen the negative side of it where people are not in and out, but it's such a just a beautiful building. And I think there's a developer who has some very bold ideas, far as bringing some retail, some housing. You know, I think what was unique to learn what he's trying to do is a car garage or a car elevator that would basically park the car for you.
Yeah.
It's good that we're having conversations on how to bring, I think, you know, one of the biggest building downtowns back to life. He even has an idea to add another floor that would kind of lift people up to be able to be just a little bit under the arch at far as the height wise. But he has some ambitious plans, and I know he's working on getting some historic tax credits from the state and just meeting with alders to, I'm sure, talk to us, because later down the line they may need a tax abatement. But it's a beautiful building, and I think glad that somebody's interested in trying to bring it back on the radar.
Is there any kind of timeline right now?
Yeah, so when I talked to him, I know next session, so the Board of Aldermen goes down, technically would have been this Friday, but after Tuesday, our special session. When we come back in April, I think he's going to hopefully start talking with alders about potential tax abatement and then vacating the Chestnut Street right outside of where the AT&T building is to make it more accessible for parking and for the residents who would live there. But he's moving pretty quick. I know there's legislation in the state level that Steve Roberts is sponsoring to give tax credits to historic buildings downtown that would change them from office space to residential.
Do you envision any hangups here? Does it look like this has got a lot of support within city government and state government that we can move forward on something?
I mean, I definitely think the support is there from city government. I haven't talked to my colleagues. I know anybody or most of the Board of Aldermen members want to make sure that we invest and help bring back downtown. I think, you know, on his end, it's just going to depend on post-COVID. We know equipment has become more and more expensive. And sometimes I've seen when developers get in, they have a price tag. And then when they start, you know, breaking down walls, they get a little higher. But I think the support, at least on the local level, would be there to bring that back on radar.
Because we talk about it all the time, that the one thing downtown needs more than anything is people.
Yep.
And if you got a big building like that occupied, whether it's office space, living space, whatever, that would be a huge boost.
I mean, over 600 units for a living space is what he's planning. And then retail, I think, on the first and second floor. And then kind of penthouse on the top floor and a swimming pool inside and outside where you'll be able to view the arch from the swimming pool on the outside.
So do we know what kind of price range are these, like, luxury apartment units? How much would a unit go for?
Yeah, we didn't get into details of the price of the unit. I'm sure as he's I think just trying to have conversations with Alder to sell his vision. And as he get closer and closer to the blueprints and all the ideas and them becoming reality, I'm sure if he come and ask the city for support, that's going to be a big question from Alders is, like, what is the price range going to be for people to afford this?
Alderman Rasheen Aldridge, Ward 14, with us in studio. Okay, so going back to Friday,
it was a little rough.
Yeah. Kind of funny, I guess. There were multiple proposals about what to do with the Rams settlement money. A lot of people thought there was a deal on Friday. Things didn't go well. Megan Green gabbled out. So, all right, let's start there, I guess.
Yeah.
What the hell happened on Friday?
You know, I will say, I think people are looking at Friday as like, oh, that was crazy. Coming from the state level and Congress, you know, not trying to be at the same bar, but some of the things that go down there is even more crazier than I think what you've seen the process happening at the Board of Aldermen. You know, Friday, for the last several months, there's been conversations about Board Bill 153, which is Alderwoman Sonier's bill, and she kind of was working with Pam Boyd. And they had a press conference with the mayor to find compromise with GSL. And then you still had 131, a lingering bill out there that Pam Boyd had worked with GSL that really didn't move. It seemed like the energy was around this compromise language. And then, you know, we got to the floor Friday and, you know, some of my colleagues decided at the last minute said, you know, we're not going to invest in downtown. We're not going to invest in Northside. We're not going to invest in the idea of childcare, if you like it or not, or whatever the structure of the bill was. And they said, you know, we're going to strip both bills and just do water. And I think that was, it threw a lot of people for a shock, because for months we've been having these conversations of, you know, a whole package deal of using this money in a way that really can transform St. Louis. And then, you know, some colleagues are like, no, let's just do water and walk away and say we did something, which I think, in my opinion, like I said, Tuesday would have been a slap in the face for city residents who've been participating in the process. My residents downtown that wanted to see investment and using this Rams money for that, as well as my ward is the only ward that has Northside and downtown, and Northside residents, you know, feeling hopeful that, you know, we can use this Rams money to also invest in North St. Louis.
So these were people who were on board with the idea until the very last minute? Is that exactly what happened?
I would say it seems like the charge was being led by Alderwoman Switzer. And out of all respect, I know she had concerns with pieces of the bill and always was very firm on just wanting to do water and then figure out like these other pieces later. When, you know, I talked to some of my colleagues, it does sound like some folks that, you know, either supported the concept at one point, didn't support it, then supported it again, and then didn't support it, was like, you know, let's just do water and come back. And to be honest, if you think about it, the water department needs about $400 million. We was only going to allocate $40 million. I continue to say it's a pun on words. It literally would have been a drop in the bucket of water. And also, we're not going to spend these funds. If we would have allocated, you know, all the funds in either bill, reality is we got to focus on ARPA first. So we're not going to spend these funds probably honestly in the next year, because we have a deadline to make sure that all the ARPA funds are spent by 2026. So it was a chaotic process. And I think it was, it caught a lot of people off guard. It caught me off guard because I thought we were going to go in and have a debate, you know, and people make their point of what they like in the bill, what they don't, maybe offer amendments. But they said, no, we're going to take 90% of the bill and just strip it, you know, passing the committee process, passing all of the processes we went through, and strip it and just do water. And they even discharged Alderwoman Pam Boyd's bill to try to do the same thing. So they were using two avenues, honestly, to hijack two Alder people's bill to just say, we're going to do water and walk away, to make it seem like, you know, we did something, which, you know, in my opinion, either we do the whole package or we just take a break and come back next session and try to figure out, which is only like 2 months, and figure out, you know, what are the hiccups that some of my colleagues still have so we can move a bill for the city of St. Louis.
My understanding that was that the water proposal, the $40 million for water, was just out of urgency to begin the water infrastructure repairs because of the disagreements among the Board of Aldermen between Boyd's bill, Sonier's bill, and Megan Green not agreeing with what was in those bills. So there was disagreement among those camps, and Alderwoman Switzer was saying, well, let's just at least do the water since we can't agree on any of this.
And I mean, I do think there was, again, a lot of behind the scenes of phone calls and conversation. There was, you know, as you've seen some positives and then negatives and positives and negatives again of, you know, it seemed like we had a compromise and we didn't have a compromise. You know, I think what Alderwoman Sonier was going to do is she had a floor sub to bring her bill back to, it was changed in committee, and she was going to bring it back to the compromise language that her and Boyd worked on. And again, even if we would have invested that $40 million, you know, we just raise people's water bill to make sure that we're, you know, not being below the red when it comes to water. This $40 million would have, you know, given a jolt to the water department, but it still, you know, won't be enough. And I think it starts conversations of maybe do we need to look and talk with Comptroller Green? Do we need to do bonds or something that really would give even more money to the water department? But I would say there was an agreement in both pieces of legislation to at least invest in North St. Louis, invest in downtown, invest in water, maybe between the child care and the workforce program. And then there was a program the mayor was bringing, youth opportunities. I think people had questions on that, but the investment in communities, I think, was very supportive on both bills, and didn't understand why water all of a sudden was, it wasn't even a compromise. It really was like, this is what we're going to do at the last hour after the bills had came out of committee.
St. Louis Alderman Rasheen Aldridge is with us on KMOX. And I'm sure you can envision, and I would imagine a lot of people reached out to you. We saw everything that happened over now the last week. We know this Rams settlement money can help be transformational to the city. And what people look at is that and go, all right, are we going to do something transformational here? And it feels, tell us if we're wrong. It does. I think a lot of people have the feeling, including me, and I think Amy feels the same way, that, oh, man, we're not going to, this is not going to transform the city in any meaningful way. Can you assure people that it will?
Yeah, I mean, what you're looking at, I think, in the city of St. Louis, you know, is like in areas of North St. Louis and downtown, they're more in North St. Louis, but have been years of disinvestment. And, you know, downtown, I think, honestly, is kind of coming back on the up and up. You've seen a lot of positive things that are coming out of downtown. I think what this money can do is continue the positive track record that has been, you know, going on in the city. To be honest, you know, this 300 something million dollars will not change the city. You know, it will
start. I mean, it is like not that much money if you really think about it.
Not if you start to break it up.
We probably need billions in the city, to be honest.
Yeah, we do. And I mean, I think, you know, hopefully we'll see with the ARPA funds as those dollars, you know, are being now, they were already allocated. Now we'll hopefully start to see them in action in some of the programs. And I think what this Rams money can do is just continue kind of the positive energy of continuing to invest with lump sums of money that we haven't seen in a long time. I agree. If we really want to transform St. Louis, probably need about $2, $3 billion. But there is hope with this Rams money. I think that we can put it in certain pots and buckets to start to make improvements in ways that we wouldn't have been able to make improvements if we didn't have this large amount of money. We would have just had to kind of operate with our city annual revenue budget.
And I guess, you know, I brought this up with Mayor Jones, who came into the studio last week and spoke with us, which we really appreciated. A lot of cynicism when residents of the city are looking at leadership, struggling with snow removal, trash not being picked up, snow plows, and looking at the North City grant program, where that money, you know, millions are was sent to North City, some of it going to businesses that don't exist or buildings that are not existing either, businesses or buildings. And they think, well, we wasted that money. How do we assure that that's not going to happen again?
Yeah. You know, with the Northside program, which I, you know, support, and I think it is a good program. I also, you know, unfortunately, it's kind of a first type of program that the city has never done before, because we've never had so much amount of funds from ARPA before to kind of create this program. And there's been hiccups. There's been hiccups where I've reached out to SLDC CEO President Neil Richardson, like, how did this happen? You know, how did, you know, people fill out an application and you guys not granted them money, but gave them a conditional, like, heads up, you're going to get it. You know, hopefully it's a learning experience for that department to kind of make sure that there is more vetting in the process with this new program. You know, and I don't disagree with the recent storm that we had with the ice and then snow. It was not, it wasn't good. And, you know, hopefully these challenges can be an opportunity for city government to figure out how do we do better. And we have to take accountability. We have to say, yes, we were wrong, but, you know, it's going to take all of us to make sure that it is fixed right. You know, and with the Rams money, I'm very hopeful. I know it looked like that it was a spectacle or a circus, but I'm hopeful that the board, you know, we've seen tough debates at the floor. I'm very hopeful that my colleagues, you know, want to work together to try to get this money out the door. And, you know, being in city government and being somebody who once upon a time who wasn't, but being in city government now, I can say, you know, there are some hiccups, but there is a lot of positive things that are also you know, happening within government with collaboration. I mean, this board has passed historic pieces of legislation. We've passed less tax abatements for developers and worked on more legislation to try to help everyday people. If it's a tenants' rights to action fund, or if it's been making sure that we were trying to put funds in medical debt. Tomorrow, I'll be hopefully passing a bill to cut red tape for food trucks and looking at how we cut red tape in city government. We are trying to move forward, but when you're working in the unknown, sometimes there are some landmines that, you know, come up. And I think we have to, when those happen, as elected officials, we got to take accountability, have a plan to figure out, you know, how we'll be able to move forward and let residents know that city government is going to continue to work and we want to work on their best interests.
Before we let you go, I wanted to ask you about the city manager proposal that is being discussed, I believe, today.
Yep. Today, right. At 1:30.
What are your thoughts on the addition of that position?
You know, and the concept of it, I actually like it. I think, you know, the idea of a city manager is somebody who can, you know, work within the mayor's administration to focus solely on the department. So to solely focus on streets, to solely focus on refuse, and to have, I think, a long-term plan. I think a lot of times what you see with mayoral administrations is when they come in, that city manager is similar to a what the mayor has now with the not public safety director, director of operations that oversee all the departments. But, you know, with all these changes, sometimes with new administrations, they bring in a new director of operations, they bring in new department heads, and you don't have that consistency. And I think with a city manager, regardless who the mayor is, their job is going to be focusing on city services and departments and making sure they're running effectively, efficiently. I don't know if this is the right time to do it right now because we've made so many bold changes. This would be on the ballot box in 2026 for the charter change. But I do think it's at least worth having a conversation so that people can start to educate themselves on what a city manager could look like in the city of St. Louis.
St. Louis Alderman Rasheen Aldridge, thank you for stopping by and visiting with us. Let's do it again soon.
Absolutely. Anytime.
It is the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX. Congratulations to Ron in St. Louis, who won tickets to the Outlaw Festival, Willie Nelson, Bob Dylan at Hollywood Casino Amphitheater in June. We'll have one more pair of tickets that we will give out tomorrow. Got to be listening for your chance to win. Also want to direct you to our Twitter page at Chris Amy KMOX. We have a poll wanting to know if you have Chiefs fatigue, because a lot of people do. A team that is about to maybe, potentially,
perhaps
three-peat in the Super Bowl. They'll play Philadelphia Sunday. This texter says, I can't get enough of our beloved Chiefs going to make history this Sunday. And there's a chance the Bears make history next year. Maybe the worst team ever.
Oh, that's rude.
No, that won't happen next year. They got a new coach.
We also have a commenter on our StreamYard. If you're streaming the Chris and Amy Show on KMOX on YouTube. This is regarding the Missouri Doge portal. None of those words make sense. Okay.
The online Doge portal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Liz says, shouldn't the state know what they're spending money on? And don't we have a state auditor to look into these things?
Yes.
Great point about
Scott
the state
Fitzpatrick.
Auditor, who is looking into spending in the state of Missouri. And not that you should always just blindly trust state officials, but that is one reason why you have an auditor and you can report things to his office as well. So yes, I'm not exactly sure. Maybe we can talk to Mary Elizabeth Coleman about the Doge portal.
Yeah, we are going to reach out to her office and we'll see. And like to know if there are people who don't think this is a good idea as well. So we're going to explore all of it. That's Amy Markscores. I'm Chris Ranji. We're going to be back with you tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Hancock and Kelly will start the show with us, as they always do on Fridays. Anything you missed on the show today is on the Odyssey app. Just download it to your phone, go back and listen. And of course, don't forget Cardinals baseball. You can stream it live from the Odyssey app this upcoming season. The Dave Glover Show is next. Amy and I will hang out for a bit on KMOX.